Blog Talk Radio.
He's 5'2" and he's 6'4". He fights with missiles and with spears. He's on 31 and he's only 17. A soldier for a thousand years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist, and a Baptist, and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting in Canada, he's fighting in France, he's fighting in the USA, and he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan, and he thinks we'll put an end to war this way, and he's fighting for democracy, or fighting for the red, he says it's for the peace of all. Die, and he never sees the writing on the wall. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned him at Dachau? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon in a war. And without him, all this killing can't go on. This is not the way we put an end to war.
Welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show. Perhaps I should feel encouraged that the UN voted to make Palestine something it calls a non-member observer state. Well, I really don't feel encouraged. The UN, after all, doesn't have a lot of power. We, the USA, notice, I didn't say we, the people. I don't think that the government of the USA represents the people very much at all. We, the once proud USA, represented by our corporations, our military, and other private interests, we use the UN to drum up support for our wars of oppression and domination that we pretend we're waging for freedom and against terrorism. We have little freedom, and we are the terrorists. We bomb, we snipe, we send our drones, we promote our agendas to all the rabble-rousers in all the countries of the world. We sell arms, usually to both sides. We love our generals so much, as long as they don't get caught with their pants down. You know, we have a recent count, 945 generals and admirals in our military. That's one for every 1,500 soldiers. With so many cooks, is it any wonder that the broth gets spoiled? I ask you. Consider how much money might be saved if we were to prune the military from the top. But these folks, well, they tend to be very close to the purse strings of government. And besides, they've got all those weapons to back themselves up. They'll decide one day just eliminate this facade of civil government and take over. Happened in a lot of other places. Rome. Our country, indeed our world, is charging along without thinking much about where it's going. I'm reminded of a story that Father Fred, a preacher at my church, used this week in his sermon. Went something like this. There was an admiral on the bridge of his ship. They were running along at flank speed into a dark night. Far ahead, he noticed lights. Dead ahead. He instructed the signalman to send a message. Change course 10 degrees to the south. The response came, change your course 10 degrees to the north. The admiral sent a new signal. He wasn't too upset at this point. He figured they didn't really know who he was, how important he was, so he sent them a new message. Immediately, change course 10 degrees to the south. I am an admiral. The response came, change your course 10 degrees to the north. I'm a seaman third class. Well, at this point, the admiral was irate. The message he sent was, you'd better change your course 10 degrees to the south. I'm an aircraft carrier. The response came back quite quickly. I suggest you change your course 10 degrees to the north. I am a lighthouse. It's time the people of the world, and especially the people of the United States, helped our admirals not to carry us into any stationary objects or over cliffs. It's one thing for a few of us to tilt at windmills. It might, in fact, be honorable and useful since we might get somebody else to look and think. It's quite another for us to blindly follow when our so-called leaders are so clearly wrong. In another era, those who followed mindlessly were commemorated in a famous poem. Half a league, onward, all in the valley of death rode the 600. Forward, the light brigade, charge for the guns, he said. Into the valley of death rode the 600. Well, I don't care to follow Alfred Lord Tennyson or anybody else into a valley of death. Thing is, they don't really need us to ride into battle, to ride into the valley of death in order for them to win. They like the battles because they sell a lot of military hardware and they keep us all scared. But the strongest weapon they have, the very strongest thing, it's our apathy. Born from fear is the numbness of not caring anymore, not bothering anymore, not doing or thinking anymore. And I'm going to borrow another short stanza, this one from T.S. Eliot, to illuminate my feelings about apathy. It's actually somewhat different from what he was writing about, but the words seem to fit the situation, and I'm going to use it anyway. This is the way the world ends. This is the way the world ends. This is the way the world ends, not with a bang, but a whimper. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show. We're glad you found us, and I'm now going to turn the show over to my friend and co-host, Mike Palachuk, an American writer.
Chuck, hello. Tonight we welcome special guest Lee M. Lane. Lee M. Lane is in Montana, and Alan Mockey is in northern Minnesota. Lee M. Lane will be speaking with us about her book, World Mart. In World Mart, Government and corporate business have merged in an attempt to keep the country from going bankrupt. The effects of global warming and antibiotic-resistant disease having caused a full collapse in infrastructure, the class divide has become profound, leaving most people trapped in an impoverished working-class world with little room for improvement. Complacency in corporate hierarchy control and confound the masses, run by the elite few, collectively referred to as corporate. Alan Mockey is a northern Minnesota activist who has been involved in the peace, labor, civil rights, and environmental movements for over 30 years. Mackey says the time has come for a new grassroots working class-based people's party similar to Canada's socialist New Democratic Party. And there's some things about Alan Mockey. Tony Cornish, he's a Minnesota state representative, has called Alan Mockey one of the most dangerous men in the world. Alan Mockey was, I think he's probably about my age in his 50s, I'm going to guess, or maybe his 60s. Anyway, he was against the Vietnam War in the early 60s. He was in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, Michigan, and he worked for the integrated public schools. When he was drafted, he told the government to worry about what direction he would be shooting. General Hershey said that he would be the first person prosecuted for treason. He said he was going to shoot people I thought were the enemy, and that was not the Vietnamese. He said he's been arrested over 60 times for civil disobedience, and he said he was making a reference to the Vietnam War. He was saying it was hard to pass out leaflets in the beginning of the Vietnam War because we were just coming out of the McCarthy period. So I'll be very interested to talk to Alan Mockey. So tonight we're gathering together for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, Duluth, a mountain in Montana, and I believe Alan will be in War Road, Minnesota, also wherever you are. It's the American dream, and you have to be asleep to believe it. We don't believe it. We don't believe in Barack Obama or the 9/11 Commission or Ronald Reagan or the U.S. military or the Warren Commission. We do believe in folks like Alan Mockey, like hundreds of others who over the decades have pursued the new American dream where the people will know the truth about the history of their own country. And because of this, they will be allowed to pursue not wealth and 900 TV stations and every Jetson gadget imaginable at the cost of the lives of the people of Gaza and Iraq and El Salvador and Afghanistan, but will be allowed to pursue peace, prosperity, and good things through peace. We are Americans. It's an amazing time to be alive. We survived Kate Smith on the radio the whole month of September 2001. We survived Bush, though not all of us. How many will survive Obama is yet to be seen. It's morning, time to wake up. There are no longer any questions we cannot ask. Nothing about our country we are not allowed to know. We are Americans. This is our country. This morning, this evening, we take it back from the CIA, the military, the bosses, the Warren Commission, Karl Rove, Dick Cheney, the 9/11 Commission. Our children will study lies no more. Did George W. Bush, his father's friends, actually steal the elections of 2000 and 2004? And if they did that, why would they ever stop at anything? Did George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Karl Rove, Condoleezza Rice, John Ashcroft, remember these guys, Paul Wolfowitz, Colin Powell, conspire to commit murder and treason in the 9/11 attacks in order to again be able to lie about anthrax, uranium, and WMD and torture in order to attack Iraq and make millions and billions of dollars? We want to know. We need to know. We deserve to know. We want to know. We deserve to know who killed Bobby Martin, JFK, Wellstone. Did we land on the moon? How about climate change, climate manipulation, Fukushima and HAARP? It's okay to ask. There are no wrong questions. No secrets in anyone's land or they're free. How do we explain to our children how the war on drugs goes with this buds for you? Prisons, poverty, trees, sun power, wind power, we can talk about all of it because we are Americans. We are not the subject of the FBI or CIA or the U.S. Army or Wall Street. We do not torture, kill children, bomb, rape, mutilate. we are Americans? Why is Leonard Peltier in prison? Why did we fund death squads in El Salvador? We overthrew elected governments in Chile, Iran, Guatemala. Really? Why? We deserve to know. We need to know. We have to know so that we may tell the world we are Americans. Don't be afraid to be a real American. Remember, they want us to be afraid, as they told us in the anthrax letters. We are not afraid. It is they who are afraid of us, as it should be. Back to you, Chuck.
And now please join us for another exciting episode of Tina Thompson, Taco Bell Trainee. Tina began her training a week ago. Tony, the manager, requires each new trainee to spend one shift at each of the workstations. Counter, ice cream, table cleaning, parking lot patrol, salads, burgers, fries. The final test is one day on the drive-through window.
Tony has a deal with the local movie theater, so the drive-through people have to incorporate a blurb about the latest movies into their greeting.
Good afternoon. Now showing Red Dawn. America is saved from terrorists by a group of gutsy red, white, and blue teenagers in a small Midwestern town. And Black Zero 030 follow a group of brave Navy SEALs in their amazing mission to kill Osama bin Laden. How may I help you? And then the person orders a number one or number five, and the drive-thru person asks, would they like to supersize that? Did they have a coupon in their chubby little fist for one night of the Kill 'Em All video game? They can check out right now by adding just 99 cents to their order with the coupon. Tina came on at noon. By 2 o'clock, she'd already decided. She took a break, went to the restroom to put in her tongue ring, ruffled her hair, or turned to her window. Have you heard about the recent Walmart strike? She asked the first car. When they said no, she asked them if they really believe Osama bin Laden was buried at sea. Well, no, he died 10 years ago, the driver said. Everything's a lie for political purposes. Just like Jessica Lynch, WMD, Pat Tillman. The driver's squawky answer echoed out loud back into the Taco Bell. Tina yelled, yeah! Raised a clenched fist and turned inside to the people at the counter. Two old ladies and a young man held up their fist for a moment just before ordering a number two. Like, fired up beyond belief, Tina turned and addressed her next customer sitting in the blue Camry where the drive-thru lane snaked around the store and out back by the dumpster. 9/11 was an inside job. They killed Wellstone. She talked about Iraq, the drug wars and prisons. People in the line began leaving their vehicles and walking up to the squawk order board window thing instead of waiting so they could hear what Tina was talking about. Little kids from the neighborhood stopped throwing snowballs at cats to wander over and sit in the bushes and listen to the squawk box girl. And when a group of men in a pickup wearing orange caps and orange mittens pulled up to her window, Tina told them everything she thought about hunters and hunting. Well, they yelled, flipped her off, squealed the tires, and Tina turned around to see Tony, the manager, standing there. He pointed to the note cards in the window and asked why she wasn't using them. Well, I didn't want to, she said. Tony nodded, turned, walked away. Next morning when Tina arrived for her scheduled shift, the first day of being regular full-time, she didn't know if she still had a job. She stomped her feet on the rug, hung up her coat and back, and saw her photo on the bulletin board. Said assistant manager underneath. Tina found Tony and asked him what was up with that. You got guts, kid, said Tony. You make us better. You complete us. Here. Tony handed Tina a box of magnetic letters and the ladder and said her first assignment as assistant manager was to go out and change the sign out front. Tina went and finished the job, backed down the ladder, stepped back a ways to see her work. She put her hands on her hips and smiled as she read. Over 100,000 tacos served, 99 cents for two soft shells, and not freaking stupid anymore. Join us next week for another episode when we'll hear Tina recommend the Oswald is Innocent Chalupas and the 9/11 Truth Gordita with medium Pepsi, only $2.39.
This PSA message brought to you by the DEA, the prison construction industry, and your local and federal politicians since who knows when. Thanks, Jesus. Thanks, Buddha. Thanks, Allah. Thanks, Alan the Alien, for the drug wars. How long has it been since Bush Sr. in the mid-80s, since Reagan, and followed up faithfully by Clinton and more Bush, and really all your neighbors and church council members as well, locking up human beings into cages for 10, 20, and 30 years, making their children cry their way into adulthood alone. That's us. We're everyone whoever brought you the drug war. Hey, can we talk now? It wasn't really about criminals. No, really. I'm not shitting, dude. Look at the bankers and all those who got us into war by lies. Those who made money on killing. And look at the billions of dollars alcohol industry. All that stuff is not illegal. But marijuana is a natural growing plant. And we made it illegal. Pretty cool, huh? Awesome, dude. So here's to you. Thank you for watching television and playing miniature golf and protecting the world from white-tailed deer. For all you do, this bud's for you. And this message brought to you by your local county jail. Give us your tired, huddled masses yearning to be free, and we'll lock them up. Put them in a small, dirty, old, crowded, out-of-the-way county jail. Tens of thousands of them throughout the United States, more than McDonald's, and we do it our way. If you've got poor people or some who came from somewhere else, or if they just can't cope with the fast pace of American society, can't keep up, the stragglers, they always get brought down by their predators. It's the way things are. Help them? Hell no. Lock them up. If they are stupid enough to think the Statue of Liberty is holding up a torch and not a middle finger, send them to us. We'll give them the history lesson, civics lesson they were too lazy or too stupid to learn. We'll stick it to them our way, and when they get out, at least they will know the real meaning of America. We're your local county jail. This is America, and this is jail. God bless America. God bless church. God bless grandma and pie and your local county jail.
George Irwin remembers time before the big climate change, back when the airlines were still in business and people still drove their own cars. The world has changed much over his lifetime, but he still believes in the American dream. But when an alleged terrorist act lands his wife in the hospital, George stumbles upon a corporate secret that could mean the end of all civilization. Liam Lane's vision of the future is dark and frightening. It would be nice to think it's just a horror story, but the situation is not all that much different from what we have today. It's all too easy to believe we could end up in a corporate world very much like what she's described. Lee, I'd like to welcome you to the New American Dream Radio Show.
Thank you so much. It's an honor and a pleasure.
To start off, I'd like you to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your writing, and then we'll focus a little bit on WorldMark.
All right. Well, I've been a writer my whole life, and I enjoy reading as much as I do writing. I love literature. And very early on, I learned that I could use literature as a means to express things that really needed to be expressed. Take a look at society, at the direction that we're going, and really make a statement about it in a way that I don't think I would be able to make without going through fiction. You know, we can speculate on the direction our world's taking. We can take a look at society, but really through fiction, we can create parallels that make people think. And that's really what I strive to do, is make people think about the choices that they're making, the decisions in their lives, and, you know, the world that we're creating, that we're all contributing to. And that's really my purpose and the reason that I write.
Well, I would I would agree that there is perhaps more truth in fiction than you'll find in a lot of the nonfiction or supposedly nonfiction things you'd find published.
Absolutely.
Worldmark is pretty dark, pretty dystopian. How far do you think we are from that?
I think that we are a lot closer than we think. You know, we live in a world of get rich quick, of fast food, of, you know, find the lowest price, whatever the cost ultimately might be. And I think a lot of us are really blind to the direction that our country's taking. You see a world or a Walmart on every corner, and you see small business slowly diminishing and being quashed as a result of that. And I think that if we don't really take a serious look at what we're allowing through our complacency, through our apathy, that we will ultimately live in a world very similar to the vision that I've expressed in this book.
Without giving too much away about the book, because we want people to hear us and decide to read it, not to figure that they already heard it. But can you describe more or less the sequence of events that might take America or the world from today into your, I don't know if I should call it a warning or a prediction, but into your story?
Yes. You know, we live in a world right now where corporate America is taking hold of every direction, every aspect of our lives, and there are large name chains all over the place, and I feel that the overall quality of life is plummeting in the process. In Worldmart, the effects of these different aspects, what people have allowed to occur, seem to have kind of snuck up on everybody. There are a number of characters who are old enough to have remembered a world that is very similar to ours, a world where you could take your own car to work, a world where you could travel across the world on airplanes, where water was not a limited resource, where food was plentiful. And they took for granted all of those things, and all of a sudden they find themselves in this world where you must recycle the water that you use in your own home, where you don't have the option of using electricity all day, because if you abuse or overuse the very, very little amount of electricity you're allotted, you're going to be fined. You know, it's a world where there's no fresh meat. Everything is canned because there's not the resources to store these things. And nobody is able to speak out because they've lost their privilege. They've lost their rights as Americans, or wherever, you know, this might actually happen to occur in the book. People have allowed this to happen, and they have forfeited their rights in the process.
Was there a particular event that triggered the change, or was it just a accumulation of smaller?
Absolutely. I worked for several years at a retail chain corporate monstrosity, and I actually managed for them for a few years. And what I saw, I felt, was very eye-opening. You know, I saw a huge gap between the working class and management, and then CEOs and the large corporate bigwigs at the top of it all. And you see people working minimum wage. They're given very, very little training. They don't know what they're doing. You know, a good example here is actually when, you know, I stopped by same store, actually, not the store that I worked at, but one of the chain sister stores, and I asked for a young man for his services, and the poor thing had just barely been hired, had no clue what he was doing, wasn't trained, and I could only see in him a casualty of class warfare. You know, when somebody other than me asked him for advice on something, he didn't know what he was talking about. You know, he actually gave bad advice, and I took the poor thing aside, and I set him straight, let him know what he was doing wrong. But ultimately, that poor kid looked like a deer in headlights. And, you know, that's the type of thing that really drove me to make an issue with this, to make a point through my literature, is we are in this world that doesn't even know what it's doing anymore. We're raising a generation of expert idiots sitting, you know, in polo shirts with name tags, and that is what defines them now. And if we allow this to continue, this is what's going to be our future. And it's up to us to change that.
How can we keep it from continuing?
Well, I think there are a lot of things that we can do. And what it comes down to immediately is we need to stop and think about what we do. We need to think about how we're contributing to the world and the society around us. We need to look at the ultimate cost of looking at the bottom dollar when it comes to buying products. And when we go to these large chains in trying to save a buck, really, what is that ultimate cost? What are we contributing to? And if we really look at what we're doing, and how we're contributing, each as individuals, because we all need to take responsibility for this. This is all of us. You know, if we don't, when you want food, you're going to go to the food mart. You need a lawyer, you're going to go to law corp. You need a roof over your head, you're going to go to corporate housing. That's all that's going to end up being left. The corporations will end up monopolizing every aspect of our life, and we're going to find ourselves in a world of apathy, expert idiots, like I spoke about, and a class divide that is irreparable.
Well, I'm afraid that your thoughts are all too close to the truth. I hope that your ideas for changing it are possible.
I'd like to
believe they're possible, and at least by talking about this here and on assorted websites and basically any time we can, maybe we bring it a little bit closer.
I sure hope so. And, you know, there are different steps that we can take, you know, just to do our part. And one of the biggest is support your local small businesses. You know, don't worry about, you know, saving that extra buck or a few pennies even, because it's really important that we go back to our roots and we really take advantage of the American dream of is what it used to be, not what it is today, because unfortunately it's gone a long way from what it once was. But if we can take a look at the bigger picture and reduce our own personal effect on this world and our environment and everything that we do, then we can make a difference. And we have to make sure that we do it collectively. Not one or two people are going to be able to make a difference here. This is a decision that we need to make as Americans, loving our country, wanting to make it what it truly is capable of being. And if we are able to look at it that way, and rise above these large corporations, deny them the power that they're taking hold right now in our country, I think maybe we've got a fighting chance.
Well, It sure sounds that way when you talk about it. It's very, very inspiring the way that you talk. Lee, as we wind down, I'd like you to tell people where they can find your books and maybe some more about you, if you have any speaking engagements or anything. Just tell people where they can find you.
All right. Well, those interested can find me at www.cerebralwriter.com, and that's C-E-R-E-B-R-A-L, writer, all one word, .com. And I don't have any speaking engagements immediately coming forth, but I do regularly blog. I feel that I blog about important issues as well as other pieces of art and entertainment that I feel reflect on the world around us and really make poignant issues, you know, as to what's going on, what the world around us is saying, what people are doing through the guise of literature, fiction, television, movies, things that people are expressing intelligently that, you know, maybe a lot of people aren't really catching on to. And so that for me is very important. You know, check out my blog. It's attached to my website. I have a few other books that I do also have available. I've contributed to a number of anthologies, but the one thing that all of my works do have in common is a deeper message and basically entreating to other people to think about this world, think about their part in this world, and really take a closer look at the direction that we collectively are taking together.
Thank you, Lee, for joining us, and have a good night.
Thank you so much.
Now, to honor America, please stand. Every one of you out there washing your car, sitting on the toilet, polishing your coin collection, driving in your cars, kneeling in the confessional, please stand. And to honor the coming war with Iran, please remove your hat. To honor the coming shock and awe, the awesome slaughter of a whole new batch of brownish people with high-tech weapons paid for by single mothers with 9 jobs, dropping off their children at daycare at 5 in the morning, please remove your shoes. To honor those journalists on our televisions, inside our radios, and in our newspapers who work diligently each day to bring us the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, please remove your shirt. And now, ladies and gentlemen, to honor the wise and discerning and courageous leaders of our nation, who will lead us in the coming slaughter of babies, infants, toddlers, young adults, mothers, fathers, and old people, please remove your pants, your dresses, your underwear. And at this time, please turn to the gigantic American flag rippling in the breeze at the north end of the stadium. Turn around and bend over and repeat after me. F the FBI, F the CIA, F the NSA, I'm living in the mother effing USA.
This message brought to you by the Boogeyman. The United States of America has a huge military, hundreds of bases around the world, but the people were told for 50 years were needed exclusively to counter one enemy, communism. And now, there aren't any communists anymore. The CIA needs to be so huge to counter the KGB. But there isn't any KGB anymore. The FBI needed to be so huge because the Reds were everywhere, even under our beds, but there aren't any Reds anymore. So, we don't need the military and bases and the CIA and FBI, right? Yeah, oh, well, no. There are terrorists everywhere. They attacked us on 9/11. They're big bees from Mexico. So there you go. We still need almost all of your money. It is what it is. Have a nice day. Stay on the same page. Take it to the next level. And please, believe. what we tell you.
Our second guest is Alan Mockey. Alan is a northern Minnesota activist who has been involved in the peace, labor, civil rights, and environmental movements for over 30 years. Alan says the time has come for a new grassroots working class-based people's party similar to Canada's Socialist New Democratic Party. Alan, if you're there, welcome to the New American Dream.
Oh, thanks for having me on your program.
How are you doing?
Fine.
Are you? Good, good. I'm over in Duluth. Are you in War Road, or where are you right now?
Yes, I'm in War Road now.
Yeah. I've never been there, but it's. I think it's up. Is it to the east or west of Duluth? I'm new to Minnesota, actually.
It's west of Duluth, about 5 hours north.
Oh, 5 hours. Okay. Well,
right on the border.
Okay, I'll have to get up there. I read a lot about you on the internet, and there's just so much to talk about. You have a progressive program for real change. Can we start there, or what? Just
sure.
Talk about what you think we need to do as a country, and I'll jump in when I need to.
Well, I think the main thing we need to do as a country is we need to take a look at this huge military budget, where we're squandering our resources and the wealth of this nation on wars, killing people, you know, on destroying other people's countries, instead of using that money to create the things that we need right here in this country. For instance, if we had a national public health care system that would provide free health care for every American and through community health care centers scattered all over this country in every neighborhood and every community, like we have 800 military bases around the world, you know, we could put 12 to 15 million people to work providing people with free health care. And this is gives you some idea of the kind of wealth that we're squandering on this, all these wars and the militarism. It's terrible. Disgusting.
In reading about you, I think you were in Grand Rapids in the early 60s, and you worked on the integration of public schools was going on then, and I think you were eventually you worked against the Vietnam War, and there was a deal when you were drafted. So you've been at this for a long time. How do you keep up? How do you keep your hope and dreams alive?
Well, I think it's my political outlook. I'm a Marxist, and I think Marxists are very optimistic that you know, working people will get together and overcome all these problems that we face together. And you know, I'm very optimistic. Every place I go, I travel very widely across Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan, organizing casino workers in the Indian gaming industry. I meet with people in peace organizations and civil rights organizations. And, you know, every place I go, people are fighting mad. They're angry. They're just plain fed up with what's going on in this country. And it's only a matter of time now. We've got to get organized. We've got to organize this anger. And I think that's the key. We got to get together around kitchen tables, you know, all across this country and begin to discuss our problems. And that's where real change starts, in the communities, where we work, in the schools, in the churches. You know, if we don't start to organize and voice our opinions very strongly through letters to the editor, marching and protesting and demonstrations and on picket lines, you know, this is the way people are going to be heard in this country. It's just like any place else in the world. People have to speak up and speak out against injustice.
You know, they do say that the ones that are active are the ones that are most hopeful. You know, they could, because you meet other people and you just draw courage from that. And War Road, how do you keep going in a small town, though? I've lived in a small town off and on. I find it's kind of tough going, but maybe you find your way. I guess you do.
Well, I'm surrounded by people that feel pretty much as I do. You know, we leaflet the community here with anti-war material, with pro-union material. The community I live in, a lot of people joke that it's Marvinville because the Marvin family owns a huge factory here that employs about 5,000 people at poverty wages. So it's not hard to find people that understand what this system is doing to destroy the lives of working class families. And all you have to do is begin to talk about it, and you find people that can relate to what you're saying.
Would you like to tell a story about enlisting for the draft, or would that be You know, just short.
That's some story. But I didn't enlist for the draft. I was drafted back in.
Right. You don't enlist for the draft.
And when they, I was actually drafted several times. Each time I was arrested when I reported for induction. One time I was arrested for destruction of government property when I stuck a bumper sticker on the window of the federal building that said, "We want jobs, not war." But the final time they actually took me for induction, and they expected me to refuse to take the step forward. To their surprise, I stepped forward, and they pushed me back, and they said, "Where are you going?" I said, "Well, I'm going in the Army. That's what you called me here for." And I said, "But keep one thing in mind. When you put a gun in my hand and tell me I'm going to be killing people, you better watch out who I'm going to be killing, because the people that are my enemies are not the Vietnamese people. My enemies are the generals and the politicians that are causing these wars." So they kept me in Detroit at the induction center for about 3 days and finally told me to go home, at which point General Hershey, who was the national head of the Selective Service, said that I was going to be tried for treason. And for about 2 or 3 years, they kept shoving these treason charges under my nose until finally there was such outrage from people. I mean, at that time, you know, everybody was protesting the war in Vietnam, and they had to drop the charges because they were making a mockery out of their own charges, you know, because so many people were against the war. But I think people are going to have to stand up and speak out and speak their minds on all these issues in the same way. And unless we do that, you know, we're in for some big, big problems in this country that are going to, we're going to be, have a hard time getting out of. We're as far as I can see, we're straight on the road to hell right now. And, you know, this is a terrible situation. These wars are just draining us of everything. They're making us all poor is what it amounts to. We're going to be a nation of poverty very shortly. Obama, you know, Obama is no friend of working people. Obama is not a man of peace. Obama is a man of war. That's who, you know, people just elected. And as far as I'm concerned, he's no different than Richard Nixon or Lyndon Johnson or any of these other people that waged these dirty imperialist wars around the world.
You know, you said that it wasn't that bad in a small town, but I did read something about how you were paid to, you know, paid the price. Your family was harassed a long time ago, and there was your son was fishing, and he was attacked, and the attacker said, "Go fish in Russia,"
yeah.
And that resulted in a recent arrest of yours. Now, but what is the status of that right now? Are you past that, or is that still ongoing?
Yeah, but that happened many years ago, back in the late 1980s, and I didn't even know that there were arrest warrants out for me as a result of my son, my 9-year-old son, being beaten up by a 30-year-old man. And I allegedly made telephone calls where I swore at these people that did this to my son. And those charges were, I have the court records here now. Initially, those warrants were dropped, and then somehow, mysteriously, those warrants came back just recently, and I was arrested in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and transported to a jail in Newaygo County, and the charges have now all been dropped, but not after the judge sent a $10,000 bond on me. You know, this is just sheer harassment. I'm not the only one that's been a victim of this political harassment. You know, the FBI has been hounding me for years and years, since the early 60s when I was a member of the NAACP Youth Council. J. Edgar Hoover, one of the reasons for saying that he was investigating not just me but our family was that Negroes were seen coming to our home. You know, this is the kind of government that we have that would spy on a family and harass a family because they have friends who are people of color, you know. And to think, you know, the FBI has spied on literally tens of thousands, if not millions, of people in this country and hounded and harassed them. You know, it's never stopped, and it continues to this very day. So, you know, we got to stop this political repression in this country, and the only way to do that is for people to say what's on their minds and show that they're not afraid of these people. You know, they threw me in jail and then later dropped the charges after setting a $10,000 bond. You know, this is disgraceful. Half of the Grand Rapids, Michigan Police Department came out to make the arrest on me over these stupid charges, charges that only carried 6 months in jail and a $500 fine. And, you know, they wasted all the money from taxpayers just harassing one individual. And the reason they harassed me at this time over charges that they created 20 years ago, that they fabricated 20 years ago, was that the Petita family, which manages the Gun Lake Casino, didn't like me coming in their casino over a three-day period talking to workers about unions. So, you know, this is going on all over this country. The FBI now works hand-in-hand with all these private detective agencies. The National Indian Gaming Association has hired an organization called Altegrity USIS, which stands for United States Information Services, to try and bust our activities trying to organize a union in the Indian gaming industry. You know, they initially hired them for around a $300,000 retainer, and now they've spent probably close to $2.5 million trying to keep unions out of their casinos in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan.
I imagine as an activist you put a lot of time and energy into the recent election, and what's next for you? I mean, is it where are you focusing your attention now these days?
Well, my main focus of attention is organizing casino workers in the Indian gaming industry. But our union organizing committee, the Midwest Casino Workers Organizing Council, and our local committees at the different casinos, you know, we're very involved in fighting for real reform for health care, for child care. We think that there should be a national public child care system providing free child care for everyone in this country. Just like kids go to school, the public schools, well, there should be child care in the same light. You know, we've been focusing here in Minnesota on pushing for a public health care system, because back in the 1930s we had two socialist governors, Floyd Olson and Elmer Benson, who brought forward the idea of a socialized health care system here in Minnesota. And people have supported that very strongly. They continue to support that. And we think that the present Minnesota government is now, the Democrats have a supermajority. The Democrats have a Democratic governor in Mark Dayton, who claims to be a big liberal. And the Democrats now control the Minnesota House and the Minnesota Senate. Before, they told us we couldn't have real health care reform because the Republicans were preventing it. Now the Democrats have no excuse. We want to see a real public health care system here in the state of Minnesota that serves the people, not the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical industry and the greedy doctors who have their fingers in the till all the time, in the public till. You know, this has to end, and we need real reform when it comes to health care. And we know that the way to create jobs is by solving the problems of the people through massive government programs. That is the way to create jobs. Obama and all these politicians are talking about how the free market is going to create jobs. The free market is the problem. The free market has created all this unemployment. The only solution to the unemployment problem in this country right now is massive government programs. Bring back the Works Progress Administration, the WPA. Bring back the Civilian Conservation Corps, the CCC. Bring back CETA, the Comprehensive Employment and Training Act, which even Richard Nixon brought into existence. You would think that a guy like Obama could do at least as good as a Richard Nixon. He claims to be like a Roosevelt. Well, Roosevelt, the way he brought WPA and the CCC program into existence, he used his executive order privilege in order to create the programs, and then he dared Congress not to fund these programs. And that's how we got the WPA and CCC, and we need to be looking at those programs right now, especially in light of Hurricane Sandy. All these people suffering on the East Coast, there's no reason for it. We could have had tens of thousands of people, the very people who are the victims of Hurricane Sandy, put back to work on our East Coast, rebuilding their own communities. But now they're sending all these private outfits in to make profit off of people's misery. When people, there's a lot of people that still don't have access to water. There are still people without electricity. Their communities are a mess. If we would have had a WPA and a CCC program to move in immediately and help those people, you know, probably 60% of the problems there on the East Coast would have been solved by now, and people would have been well on their way to rebuilding their homes and their communities.
Alan, thank you for taking time to speak with us, and especially thank you for your years and decades of work, and I hope you'll have time to come back and talk to us again. In closing, could you tell people where they might go on the web to get in touch with you or to read your writings or to learn more about you?
Sure, I have a Facebook page. People can just put my name in and Google it, Alan Mackey, A-L-A-N-M-A-K-I, and I have a blog called Thoughts from Podunk. They can read what I write there. You know, if there's people listening in Minnesota, Wisconsin, or Michigan, I'd be happy to meet with people in any of those states to discuss what we're doing, organizing casino workers, or what we're doing in the way of developing movements for peace and social justice. And that's all they have to do is Google my name, and they'll you know, find out how to contact me. My telephone number is 218-386-2432.
Alan, thanks a lot, and I hope you come back soon and have a good night, okay?
Sure. Anytime. Give me a call. Talk to you later, and thanks for having me.
You bet. See you.
The moon! We went there. Never went back. Makes sense? Same thing happened with the big discovery of the car, airplane, Hawaii, Las Vegas. And, you know, no problem getting back from the surface of the moon to that main spaceship thing. And technology. Now, you know, I mean, we could do that in the 60s. Computers were as big as rooms. There's no such thing as personal computers or the internet. But we could do it, and we never went back. Hey, look on me. Hey, William Warren. The beverage here, man. Got my rights. Going to the library. I'm doing a paper. Freaking hall monitors. They think they own the stupid school. That press conference. Wow. Buzz Aldrin, Neil Armstrong, Michael Collins. They should have been like, man, we were so excited. Just get back from the moon. Never tested that moon landing thing, and then the takeoff from the moon, the hookup with the orbiter thing. How could you practice it? It all worked like a charm. I'm going to live. I've been to, like, the moon, man. But they were, like, we're so depressed and so shy. We see stars. I don't know. I don't remember. It's almost like they were hiding something. Hey, look on me. Look my past and my other pants. I told you, man. Damn fascist.
Do we believe what we believe because we have studied, held them in our hands, rolled them around, and decided? Or was it because we heard it on the TV from some person being paid to deliver the message? It's been a long road, from a stolen election to a government planned attack on September 11, 2001, to two invasions based on lies, based on power, on money, to a murdered senator, the one standing in their way who would not be moved. We didn't want it to come. We marched, we emailed, we sang, we wrote, we got arrested, but it came anyway. And it is still here.
The new American dream is a yellow ribbon free zone. We do not support the troops. The troops are not defending our freedom. They're thugs for the empire. Hoorah! You're all about putting a boot up their ass from Toby Keith. He's a brave man to encourage other men to kill men, women, and children for no reason. The real patriots were the Dixie Chicks. We all know that now. Protesters protect our freedom, and that's the truth. Think Cynthia McKinney, Cindy Sheehan, not George Bush or John McCain. A hero does not drop bombs on people who are trying to live their lives. Come on. Teachers, priests, ministers, coaches, parents, please start telling the truth. We can handle the truth. In fact, without the truth, we cannot live. We will die slowly and then all at once. We will collapse and it'll be that. It'll be over. Dusty pile of rubble and ho-hos and lies. We need a new dream. Something real and solid to believe in. truth in our history books. Bread on the table of the poor. We have many heroes from which to draw inspiration, people who gave and are giving their lives to the truth. Patriots, if you will. Hard workers. I don't care what you call it. They're there. They've always been there, even if we don't see them, even if they're not famous. They don't give a damn about that. They're driven by something inside of them, and we can draw hope from the absolute fact that that same thing is also inside of us. This message brought to you by the good folks at World News Trust, the Spiritual UN, author James Boomey, the former Rock Creek Free Press, and those individuals who've contributed over the past 20 months so that we can bring you the New American Dream Radio Show. If you'd like to become an advertiser or supporter, please contact me, Chuck Gregory, at CWG Services, or just leave a message on our website, theshow.newamericandream.info. Thanks also go out to the many guests who've taken the time to visit with us over these months. And especially to you, we thank you for listening.
Well, it's been a long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. The flags are at half staff at the post office and Bueller Chevrolet and the high school, and also Taco John's, as they have been for weeks, months and months, to commemorate and celebrate the death of Osama bin Laden and also the burial at sea of Cruella de Vil, the Wicked Witch of the West, buried at sea, as well as Captain Hook, buried at sea, and the Big Bad Wolf, buried at sea. A while back, we heard some stories about Kate King, the daughter of Jack Robert King, the local internet radio show host. Well, Jack Robert is long gone, killed by the police, but Kate is still around. And she sent some transcripts of some of her father's radio shows and some homemade notes to tell the story of their family. She sent it to the local newspaper, but they didn't want it, so she sent them to us.
Is this heaven? Nope. It's Nebraska. For everything good is bad. All the good stuff about this state is sour, bitter, spoiled. Because this state is for the war. These people are for the war. They support the troops, the war. They kill children and anyone else that gets in their way as they drive to Hy-Vee for the special on iceberg lettuce. And so all the ice cream and lollipops and hay rack rides and painted ponies are for shit. Somebody needs to bomb Nebraska. Somebody needs to send fighter planes and cruise missiles down Main Street, put giant craters in the outfield grass, down the perfect streets and avenues where all is faux sweetness and light. Children bouncing to and fro, wiener dogs yipping in rhyme, while on the other side of the world, the streets are ripped apart, as are the children and the dogs. We think those ripped apart children are fine. We think we've torn the hearts and stomachs from those children for their own good. The electronic time and temperature sign at the Nebraska State Bank says, "We support our troops." Every other car has a yellow sticker on the back that says, "We support those. Support those darn troops fighting over there for our daggone freedom." Don't you hate those message signs in front of Nebraska churches? So trite, so patriotic. These people are not Christians. They have about as much awareness of who they are or where they're going as ants to a picnic. They march to church each Sunday thinking the feast is meant for them when they're merely pests. Folks in Nebraska will grumble and scuff their shoes all day long at a two-penny increase in gas prices. But a $40 billion bill for wars in Iraq and Afghanistan won't even get a mention at coffee time. The stupidity of Nebraskans cannot be adequately measured using today's available technology. If we did not use that $40 billion to kill children in Iraq and Afghanistan, We could have great schools, hospitals, railroads, insurance, candy for supper, whatever we want. But instead, we bomb kids. Pro-life fanatical parents bombing kids so that their own kids can't have a new school. What we need in this country is somebody on the left, somebody underground under the front porch in a subsidized rental apartment in Dayton, somewhere, to counter the propaganda minister of the state currently running about 4 hours each afternoon on every Nebraska radio station. Rush Limbaugh is, of course, the Goebbels of the United States Empire, bought and paid for, but we don't understand that yet. It'll take 50 years and more for it to sink in, but it's true nonetheless. And let me just leave you with this. The weight of the world is on your shoulders. You feel it, don't you? The world is waiting for you to do something. To be yourself, to be who you really are, not some scared guy at the stop and go, grinning and chuckling at some joke about Iraqi cadavers melting in the sun on the streets of Fallujah, but the guy who your Jesus or Buddha or Alan the Alien intended you to be. You were placed here by that entity. Like one of those football players on those electric playing boards of long ago to do a job. But all you've been doing is buzzing, rattling, shaking, and refusing to come out of the corner. The old ladies sitting with their hair freshly done in their two hot houses on winter afternoons, still nagging husbands long gone, wondering if today is the day to swallow the rest of the pills. They watch you drive by with all the potential and good things you have that you don't even realize. They wonder when you are going to turn into you. Well, this is Jack Robert King, and this is Looking for Bigfoot Radio. Y'all have a good night.
And that's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO laundromat attendants are about average.
And that's it for another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. Once again, we thank those who sponsor us, worldnewstrust.com, thespiritualun.org, june2508.com. We thank you for being here, and we hope you'll be back next week, same time, same place. And thank you, Mike, and good night.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Daniel Lewin. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.